high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. 1-866-408-7669. Colonel Alan West is going to be here, and we'll discuss that at the bottom of the hour. A lot going on today, including we have Facebook making major changes just following the wake of X. Now, the significant thing about Facebook making major changes, unlike X, they changed ownership. So in comes Musk. He unleashes the journalist Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, Michael Schellenberger, and says, go find out what they've been up to. And he exposes all the shadow banning and all the banning and all the bias and infiltration from Adam Schiff and other people like the FBI and the administration. Well, Facebook seems to have had a revelation. Now, many people are going to doubt it. I remember the Zuckerbucks, $400 million in 2020 to key districts that would flip states and precincts. But Mark Zuckerberg, let it be known, when he told Joe Rogan, I got a call from the FBI saying, look out for Russian disinformation in the fall. And when it happened in this Russian laptop, we were told it's Russian disinformation, so we banned it. And now I realize that was wrong. Well, now he realizes even more. He's going to make some three major changes. And we just had Joel Kaplan on there, chief global affairs officer, to announce them. And one of which, no more third-party monitoring. Number two, they're going to have community notes like the X has. So let's say I post something and I say, Richard Nixon's the best president ever. And he should never have been impeached. You're not going to take that down. You're not going to shadow ban it. You're going to put in community notes. So he was impeached. He was about to be impeached until he decided to quit. And this is the evidence they had on him. And people with James, like James Rosen, the experts in the area, will go in there. They're going to go back to that. They're going to admit the fact check. He admits the fact checkers are biased. They're going to lift restrictions on when they're actually shadow banning or banning people at all, as well as topics like trans or the vaccine is bad. They're going to stop with these restrictions and stop with the punishment. And they're going to have a new approach on what is illegal and what's going to be filtered. Their filters weren't working. Third-party fact checkers weren't working. So they're going to open it up. And despite if you go out and say, I'm going to wipe out the world, I got a nuclear bomb, that might get attention, but it's got to be severe. Here's Joe Kaplan, Cut 38.
This is a great opportunity for us to reset the balance in favor of free expression. What we're doing today is we're getting back to our roots in free expression. There's a number of changes we're making. So we're eliminating the third-party fact-checking system. Well-intentioned at the outset, but there's just been too much political bias in what they choose to fact check and how.
Yeah, there is political bias. We all know this political bias. The question is, do you turn the page? Are you willing to turn the page with them? I said to him, if you really want people to trust you again, do what X did. Go back and exterminate. Go back and expose and go back and say that I'll never do this again. Or well, how about this? Here's the pressure I was under by the FBI to shadow ban Trump postings or people that support him. And, you know, it's a negative. I think it's a positive. But if you're MAGA, the Democrats think it's a negative. Republicans think it's a positive. Well, you were taken down and shadow banning them or preventing them from getting access online or making feel like they're not welcome. Here's more. Cut 39.
So what we're going to do instead is adopt a system like X has of community notes. So we're just going to rely on our own community of users to provide people more information about what they're seeing. And we think that's going to work. So somebody can write a note. And then the way it works is different people on the platform can sort of vote on that note. And if you get people who usually disagree, who all say, yeah, that sounds right, then that note gets put on the post and people see it. X has been doing it for a while. We think it's working really well. And we're going to adopt that system.
So, I mean, look, if you see Mark Zuckerberg, evidently he's changed his total approach. He's into jujitsu now. They put Dana White on his board along with another conservative. They released some others. I was talking to Joel Kaplan, too. He was on our show exclusively on Fox and Friends. And I said, you know, what are you going to do? Because X had to – all these people, when X changed, they were outraged. And they had to get fired. They just quit. I go, what are you going to do? He goes, well, we had to gut the place about a year ago just because of revenues and restructuring. So no longer are people feeling like the employees are running the company. So they feel more fortunate now. They're in a different place than they were a few years ago. And Mark Zuckerberg went out of his way to post all this last night. Cut 37.
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the U.S.
Like it. I like the change. I mean, if you look at McDonald's, DEI, gone. You look at the same things happen at Disney, DEI, gone. You see at these universities, got rid of affirmative action. You see a lot of, the Walmarts, got rid of DEI. Hopefully we're going to get that into the government, into the Pentagon, and get rid of all this crap that's been gumming up the works. I'm not saying Republican. I'm not saying Democrat. I'm saying common sense. I think it's back. The other big story that's happening is the horrible way in which Joe Biden is burning the house down as he leaves office. He has put out a nationwide ban on offshore drilling. That's 14% of total oil and gas. Both sides, 620 acres of offshore drilling sites he is banning. He says, well, you don't use it much anyway. This guy is just trying to slow Trump down because he thinks if he can get 2 years of slowing Trump down, put him in the courts, he'll slow that agenda down. But, man, you look like you're having a temper tantrum on the way out. You're burning the house down. And I'll tell you, the whole trend is just KJP tried to rationalize it yesterday. Says it's no big deal. Meanwhile, natural gas is what literally fuels our Western Europe, which literally fuels allies like Japan and South Korea. We could provide it. We told them not to buy them from the Russians because of the war in Ukraine and all their abhorrent behavior. And what do? We ban mining and we start to ban offshore drilling and say, let's just green the economy. What planet are you on? Cut three.
President Biden took action to protect the entire U.S. East Coast, the eastern Gulf of Mexico, the Pacific off the coast of Washington, Oregon, and California, and additional portions of the northern Bering Sea in Alaska from future oil and natural gas leasing. So let's be clear here. The area President Biden is protecting has relatively minimal fossil fuel potential in the areas and do not justify the environmental, public health, and economic risk that would come from new leasing drilling.
What risk are you talking about? But you hop on a jet plane, you hop on Air Force One, you hop in your car, and you expect oil and gas to be there. You want it at a good price. So we should buy it from Iran? Should we buy it from Russia? You idiots. You want to buy it from Venezuela? It's not a choice of should I use it? No. Should I buy it from somebody else who is dirtier at a higher price? Or should we do it ourselves for our security and for the good of the environment? It's absolutely insane what he's doing. So now you got to go through legislation. I just thought they could just redo it with an executive order. But if you go to redo it with an executive order, it could be challenged. It goes to the courts again. I think they should challenge this in the courts. But through an executive order, I imagine everybody in the House that's Republican will vote for it. Maybe some clear-thinking Democrats. And then you get it to the Senate. I think you might need 60. I am not positive. But, you know, guys like Fetterman who are in a landlocked state, I don't think that's really going to be an issue for them. Here's Rick Perry, cut five.
I think the president has the power. I think the president has the ability to leverage with this Senate, with this House, to go in and change that statute back to where those properties can be back into production again. I suspect that you'll see a big push out of the Trump White House to work with Congress to make that happen, and it should. That ought to be an easy fix where we go back in and say, look, we know you were being cute, President Biden, but so much for your cuteness.
Sky is just out of control, and here's the worst. They're letting 11 Gitmo detainees go over to Oman where they're going to be, air quotes, monitored. You're talking about guys that are the worst of the worst, directly linked with bin Laden. At least two are bodyguards. You know these names. You've been following. Al-Hawassi is one of the architects of, I believe, of the coal bombing. What's his name? He was Al-Attash. Another close friend of bin Laden's, this Al-Hawaii, he's alleged al-Qaeda fighter that as of late as 2016 was still telling everybody his extremist views. And one of these guys is being held back. held back because he's going to be exchanged for three Americans held in by the Taliban in Afghanistan. Wait, I thought we don't leave anybody behind. Three Americans left behind, and this guy directly worked for bin Laden, part of his personal crew in Afghanistan, trained in Afghanistan, a member of UBL's inner circle. We're letting him out. An associate of KSM, we're letting him out. This is what this guy is doing out the door. It is sickening. Every Democrat should be as outraged as every Republican. Absolutely sickening. And you want to know his mindset? You see it, how angry he is, how he knows he's a failure. He knows that people repudiated everything he did. They know his vice president sucked. It was a terrible choice. And we know he's been a terrible president. He's got two speeches. He'll probably slur his way right through them. We found out some of the facts it's going to get worse, that he never worked a complete day. Some days he couldn't work at all because the president just, well, sometimes he's had bad days and good days. Who ever heard of that? Prison should be working around the clock. You got 4 years. If you're lucky, you get 8 years. And when you're done, you can rest and make your $1 billion like Barack Obama. Not this guy. He's an absolute travesty. And every Democrat should be horrified that he represents them. And now that you should be horrified, too, that you covered for him. And as Jonathan, we had, what's his name, on yesterday on Meet the Press. We had Jonathan, his name's on the tip of my tongue. Yeah, Jonathan Martin was on yesterday, and he was just saying how no one should make excuses for him any longer because you covered for him forever, his intellectual deficits. He denies he had them. He also thinks he could have won. And here is Jonathan Martin on Meet the Press from Politico, Cut 32.
It's not worth defending him, though, because at every turn the last year and a half, he has taken the path of the most indulgent turn for himself rather than the good of the party by running again, by pardoning his son, and now, frankly, by some of these choices for the Medal of Freedom, going to Rome for one last trip. He's not exiting in a way that I think reflects well on his party, and Democrats are deeply, deeply unhappy about it, and they should be.
Yeah, they should be, and it's getting worse. Go ahead, defend this crap. You know, Adam Schiff, before he Trump got involved, used to be someone somewhat moderate when it came international because he was on Intelligence Committee and when he came into the challenges internationally. But let's see if he can get himself to do it now. All right, I'm going to come back and take some calls. We'll discuss this and so many more. It's just disgusting what's happening. Trump cannot get in there soon enough. You know who believes that? I think most of America, even the people that voted for Harris, outside the ultra-left wing of the AOCs of the world, even they have to say, you sicken me, Joe Biden, and you do.
Politics, current events, and news that affects you. Brian's got a lot more to say. Stay with Brian Kilmeade.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Upgrade your business with Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. Shop Pay boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning fewer carts going abandoned and more sales going cha-ching. So if you're into growing your business, get a commerce platform that's ready to sell wherever your customers are. Visit Shopify.com to upgrade your selling today.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If Elon Musk didn't buy X and expose what he exposed and put community notes like this, do you think we'd be in it? What did he, in buying this and doing what he did, do for the introspection that Facebook is showing right now?
I think Elon's played an incredibly important role in moving the debate and getting people refocused on free expression. And that's been really constructive and productive. And we're just glad that we've got the opportunity now to make these kind of changes and to get back to our roots in free expression.
So how do you feel about that? Are you willing to turn the page on Facebook, on Instagram, and think to yourselves, okay, they realized they were wrong. They realized they were under the thumb of Joe Biden through the pandemic and what they've censored in terms of people who might have had questions about therapies being used, about the vaccine effectiveness, about school shutdowns, about questioning Anthony Fauci. So with that pressure, Facebook succumbed, and they began to come out of it. And as they came out of it, now that Trump won it, they said they're going to revamp everything. Now, is it a matter of survival, pure business, or is it conscience? Conscience, because I don't want if Republicans or Democrats to win. I don't even want to be known as a politician. I got into business, not politics, for a reason. That's why, and I'll never forget it, Neil Ferguson on Hoover, I did the interview. Trump wins the election, and all the controversy about Russia and James Comey and General Flynn and all these things. I didn't know. Nobody knew what was going on there. And the FBI, I think the president's compromised. I think that tape is real and the dossier is accurate. So we know this, social media, Facebook set up an office right in the Trump camp, and they used it, and Facebook benefited from it. And the Trump people love Facebook. And then when Trump wins, Silicon Valley was blaming social media, these social media giants for this, whether it was Twitter or Facebook. Those were the two behemoths back then. There was no TikTok. So Neil Ferguson said to me, look for Silicon Valley. The backlash has been so great. Look for them to get revenge on Trump for using them so effectively. By the way, they offered their services to Hillary Clinton's camp. They were incapable of using social media effectively. Part of the reason why they lost. Here we are. Was he 72 back then? 70 years old? That guy was more forward thinking in his 70s than Hillary Clinton in all her experience was at a similar age. But of course, she had this huge, sprawling campaign, tons of money. It didn't matter. But having said that, they succumbed in 2020, and they put $400 million into various precincts that were going to be contested states, and they made sure that Joe Biden won. And yeah, they said, well, we gave to both sides. Yeah, gave something like 100 or 100,000 to Republicans, 400 million to Democrats, strategically placed so-called Zuckerbucks. So are you willing to forgive and forget? Trump went over and accepted him. They had dinner. He's going to remember, he said. And Zuckerberg came over. Now remember Zuckerberg and Elon Musk. Well, Elon Musk, out of everything that Elon Musk did, from Starlink to his Tesla company, to now his boring company where he's B-O-R-I-N-G, where he's putting tunnels underneath the ground, beginning to alleviate traffic. And you got to see some of the video of this. It's about a $7 billion company. It's going to be worth a lot more. Out of everything he did, I think his greatest contribution was buying Twitter, which is cost him $44 billion. And they say he overpaid for it, and he's beginning to restructure it. And he's losing money right now. But I'm telling you right now, advertisers are coming back. I'm sure advertisers are coming back to conservative media to a degree, too. I don't really do sales for a living. But for the longest time, if you advertise on this channel, despite their ratings, they were going to find a way to ban you, or major companies would avoid you. And now you go tell me, where are you going to go? You want to go find a woke company with no eyeballs and you want to go advertise there? Go ahead. Don't tell me you're doing good for your product. The release of 11 more Gitmo detainees and a possible prisoner swap. We'll talk about that with Lieutenant Colonel Alan West, and the ability of this House, with a small margin, to get things done for the President of the United States, the future President of the United States. I'm going to ask Colonel Alan West about that. You're listening to Brian Kilmeade Show.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
It's ridiculous. I'll unban it immediately. I will unban it. I have the right to unban it immediately. What's he doing? Why is he doing it? We have oil and gas at a level that nobody else has, and we're going to take advantage of it. And when I see somebody saying he's going to ban 625 million acres, he doesn't know what that is. He doesn't even know what 625 million acres would look like.
He did, though. He went ahead and did it, all basically offshore drilling outside Texas. Anything in future drilling is out, and that's where we have to explore more. There's no question we have a big benefit in the Gulf of Mexico. I get it. But if you talk to oil and gas experts, and I did today on television and off, they are outraged by this. And now you have a choice. You're President Trump. You reverse it, and then a left-wing activist is going to sue you, and then the whole thing gets caught up in court, or you try to do it legislatively quickly. But what it does It just complicates the transition. Don't let anyone tell you this is a friendly transition. Don't be nice to my face and do this. I'd rather you be mean to me and don't set me up and make my life harder as I try to take the White House. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West joins us, Dallas County Republican Party Chair and American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, your thoughts about this offshore drilling canard?
Well, it's good to be with you, Brian, and Happy New Year. And you're right. This is not a smooth transition. This is basically Joe Biden and the progressive socialist left doing everything they can to, you know, hinder President Trump in restoring American energy independence and making us slaves to the Green New Deal. And I think that politically, this is a death knell for the Democrats, and that's what we should be talking about. This here it is in Joe Biden's final 2 weeks, 3 weeks of being in office. He is trying to keep the American slaves to OPEC, to Saudi Arabia, to Venezuela, to whomever, now allowing us to have our own energy exploration. And why would you want to do something like this in your waning days? And I'm sure we'll talk about the terrorists that he's releasing as well. But it just goes to show that they care more about their agenda than they do about the American people. And I think that this will cause them to be pushed further into political exile.
I hope so. I just think that he's embarrassing Democrats, let alone himself. So he hasn't talked to anybody. He's angry at everybody. He says he would have won, which shows how clueless and detached he is. And then he's still blaming Obama and Nancy Pelosi, who say, don't look at me. Here's Rick Perry on what Trump can do. Cut five.
I think the president has the power. I think the president has the ability, the leverage with this Senate, with this House, to go in and change that statute back to where those properties can be back into production again. I suspect that you'll
right.
see.
Right. And so he thinks he can do it just through an executive order. We'll see about that. They also banned it off Alaska again. Remember, Trump tried to shake that in 2019 that Obama put in play, which is insane. You ask the people of Alaska, they want it. They want the oil and gas. They get a rebate on oil and gas into everybody's paycheck, into all the residents in Alaska. When you stop it, you hurt them. What does he not understand? And also mining restrictions, too.
Well, they don't care about the American people. And what we fail to understand is that they put their agenda over anything. And I think that there needs to be a two-pronged approach. Sure, you know, this was an executive action that Joe Biden took, and President Trump can come in immediately and reverse this executive action, just the same as Joe Biden did by undermining our border by executive action in the first, 90 days or so of the of his administration. The other thing is that then we can pursue going after this 1953 act that they're trying to claim gives them the ability to do this. And politically, again, when you think about the midterm elections coming up, any Democrat that doesn't support opening up our energy exploration and making us energy independent, that's something that you hang on them in, a year and a half when it's time for the next midterm elections of 2026, so you can expand your majorities in the House and Senate. So I think you take the executive action, and then also you take the legislative action, and you put the Democrats in an untenable position. You take the high ground on this one.
All right, so let's talk about the Gitmo detainee is going to be released. These guys are the worst of the worst, including a prisoner swap that will release three Americans. I thought we didn't leave anybody behind. Turns out there's three Americans being left in Kabul, and what they're doing with these prisoners, this is just criminal. Some of these guys, Ahmed al-Awali, as late as 2016, an al-Qaeda fighter, UBL security detail, as late as 2016, still talking like al-Qaeda is the number one thing in his life. Also, remember al-Awasi? He's going to be going to Amman, Oman. Remember, you also have al-Awasi and this guy, Bin al-Attash. These guys work shoulder to shoulder with bin Laden. We're giving him to Oman, and they said they're going to keep an eye on them.
Yeah, just the same as Obama got rid of the five senior members of the Taliban, and they were sent to Qatar, and now they're back in power in Afghanistan. Look, you know, you've got to be tone deaf after what just happened in the United States of America on New Year's Day with that terrorist attack, someone that was ISIS inspired, to then go and say, I'm going to release terrorists from Guantanamo Bay. So it just shows that Joe Biden and the left, they don't care about our energy security. They don't care about our national security, which leads to our domestic security. You should not be doing something like this. These are hardened terrorists. They should be, you know, kept off the battlefield ad nauseum, ad infinitum until they die. But we also have to remember that that plea bargain agreement for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, we just found out that it can't be overturned. So the Secretary of Defense, Lloyd Austin, he kind of got a slap on the wrist. So now we have a plea bargain agreement in place for Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. All of these things Joe Biden should not be touching. This should be the type of thing that Donald Trump should be in charge of. Donald Trump can come in and tell the Taliban, I want the Americans back, just the same as he told Hamas, I want the hostages released. Joe Biden is operating from a position of weakness, and no one cares about him.
So George Glensman, Ryan Corbett, Mohammed Habib are Americans in Kabul. We are still giving the Taliban humanitarian aid. How about stopping that? He's going to be swapped for Mohammed Rahim Afghani, a UBL, associate who's been in Gitmo. So guess what? Mm-hmm. If you want Khalid Sheikh Mohammed back, just get a high-profile American. We'll obviously do that. We're playing ball, aren't we?
Yeah, we shouldn't be playing ball with these guys. I mean, and you're right. The fact that we're giving millions of dollars to the Taliban government, this is a terrorist organization, still is a terrorist organization. And where do you think a lot of that money is going? A lot of that money is going to terrorist training camps that, once again, have been reestablished there in Afghanistan. This is a stuck-on-stupid foreign policy and decision-making, you know, process that we see with the Biden administration. And what they should be doing, I know that Karine Jean-Pierre said that these last 2 weeks are going to be jam-packed with a lot of things. The only thing they should be doing is packing up, not jam-packing anything. They should be getting ready to go out the door. But instead, they're putting America and Americans in a very horrible and tenuous situation because, like you said, they're upset, they're mad because they lost, you know, grow up.
Yeah, it would help if he did that. I don't know what else he's capable of. He's going to visit the Pope. He's got more pardons to give out, reportedly. You know, the one to his brother's coming up soon. And then I just got to say, it was pretty extraordinary to watch Kamala Harris have to gavel in the new leader of the free world, and that is Trump. Beat her. She had to announce it. Showed a little bit of class there. God was able to pull that off. But that same thing Al Gore had to do for George Bush. But they were able to do it. So it's just it's interesting to gonna see what they can get done once they're in. Are you under the belief that doing tax reform, border security, defense spending could be done in one big bill? Or are you for doing it three separate bills or four separate bills?
I would rather take the mindset, how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? Instead of making these big omnibus type of bills, which, you know, we always know there's something hidden within them, let's just be very specific. What I would love to see this Congress do are pass 12 appropriations bills. That's their only constitutionally mandated duty and responsibility. Pass a budget so we don't get to the end of the year and we're stuffing all of these things into some type of some type of piece of legislation. So, yes, I'd rather them see it get it done, but get it done focused and get it done according to the regular order of the House of Representatives and also with the Senate.
Here's what Kevin McCarthy said, knowing that it looks like Speaker Johnson feels like he can only get it if they're all wrapped in one. Cut 11.
Looking what happened with the speaker's race, okay, wasn't as tough as mine, but still. But they've got a small majority now, smaller than what we had. And it's the first time in modern history the majority in the Senate is bigger than in the House. And when they take office, two more members of the House are going to leave. And to fill those seats, the races in Florida aren't going to happen to April 1st. The one in New York will happen past that. So they're even going to be a smaller majority. Nobody can miss it.
So that's why no one can miss it. So they'll say, okay, Alan West, you are for border security, but you don't like tax reform. You want defense spending. But you don't want other elements of this. So what happens is they say, if I put something in there for everyone, I won't lose anyone. That's Speaker Johnson's theory. Because guys like Chip Roy, you know, you can't, I mean, and Massey, these guys, if they don't get everything they want, they just don't vote for it.
Yeah, and I think that the American people and folks on our side of the aisle, the Republican side of the aisle, starting to get very tired of that type of sophomoric behavior, which almost becomes imbecilic. You have to understand that when you can move the needle 75%, it's just the same as in football. If you pick up 3 or 4 yards on first down, guess what? You're moving toward getting the first down. And if you can pick up another 3 or 4 yards and then another 3 or 4 yards, you got a first down. So this sense of incrementalism is something that we should be accepting instead of thinking that we're going to throw on first down an 80-yard bomb and get a touchdown. So I would counsel Massey and Chip Roy to start thinking in those terms about what you can continue to do tactically to get to your strategic goals and objectives and stop throwing these temper tantrums.
All right, Alan West, thanks so much. I will see you soon. Thank you.
My pleasure. God bless, Brian.
All right, Colonel, 1-866-408-7669. Get on board. So Mark Zuckerberg's chief of staff basically came on with the set of Fox and Friends and announced major changes to the platform that are going to make it fair and balanced, including naming Dana White and two others to his board to make big decisions, especially as it relates to AI. I've heard, according to J.D. Vance, that AI, the whole generation there, a lot less to the left than the ones on social media. And even social media is broadening out. Are you a believer that Facebook has changed? Give me an idea. And are you a one-bill person or are you a multi-bill person? If you got multi-bills, you could probably get immigration done real quick, get a quick win. If you're doing it all, it'll be a major win, but not guaranteed. And you probably got to wait till May. Weigh in, 1-866-408-7669. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
All right, we are back. 1-866-408-7669. You can write me, BrianKilmeade.com. Just a quick note before I get to you guys and go over a little bit more, which I have not touched on yet, and that is the nominees and the schedule being set up. Got to get the president's nominees done. One thing that's driven me nuts is how long it takes to staff. I mean, it takes these people, give up your lives. You got to go through the FBI background check. You can't work. You got to just wait. And then you get your hearing. And after your hearing, then they got to vote on you in committee. And then they got to vote generally on you. And at least get the DNI done. At least get the Secretary of State done. So we'll talk about that. But just a quick announcement. On February 15th, I'll be in Jacksonville. WOKV listeners know this. So I hope to see everyone at the Florida Theater, History, Liberty, and Laughs. Or my chance to see you guys in person will be great. But a couple of things. So we have to set up. Pete Hegseth looks like he's going to go first, but it's going to be a doubleheader on the agenda. So it looks like it's going to be along with Pam Bondi. Now, Pam Bondi is supposed to be a layup, and lawyers are usually really good at the give and take of these hearings and know not to say too much and not necessarily don't say too much, but if you're too exposed, if you are too open and transparent, it brings up another question. So it'll be Defense Secretary nominee Pete Hegseth will be first. Then it'll be Pam Bondi, the Deputy AG Todd Blanche will also expect it on the 14th, and Kash Patel could be going up as early on the 14th. We'll see. I hope so. Let's get it out. Let's cover it. Let's watch it. Let's evaluate it. Let's do it together. Agriculture Secretary nominee Brooke Rollins on the 15th, so it'll be the next day, or the 16th. They haven't figured it out yet. Then Lee Zeldin will go. One way or another, got to get this done quick. The ones that are going to have no problem is Doug Burgum. The ones that are going to have no problem, I think, is Pam Bondi as well. Kristi Noem could have a problem if she doesn't prepare, which I know she will. And the other person who will have no problem will be Marco Rubio. I mean, the guy's going to be Secretary of State. He has been mysteriously quiet. I mean, we haven't heard from anyone at all, but in the past we've been in touch. He's done this show a lot, but they've been told to keep a low profile. Man, I wish I knew that he was being briefed and kept up to date. But when you see the exit interview from Anthony Blinken saying he wouldn't, doesn't have any regrets about anything. You know how doomed we are on foreign policy. And, you know, the president coming out and saying something as obscene as he said, when people asked him about, you know, you're leaving what is your thoughts about leaving as the oldest president? And he lashes out like he did about foreign policy again, where he's a disaster. And they said that he got elected because of his knowledge and what he brings to the table. Remember what Joe Biden was doing. Joe Biden, everything that he was touching was blowing up. Here he was asked this about, you know, what are your thoughts about leaving as the oldest president, Cut 31.
Actions we take. The only thing, by being the oldest president, I know more world leaders than any one of you ever met in your whole damn life. And I know them. And I know how they think. Not a joke. What really hurts is when we talk about immigration the way we do.
Okay, number one. You talk about illegal immigrants like the one Zapata who's going to be in court today lighting a woman on fire. You better believe we're going to talk terrible. If you talk about the gotaways that get through, you talk about the 8 million that got here illegally. I have no patience for people who are going to break our laws in order to get into our country. Don't worry about what we think about illegal immigrants. Why don't you stop it and control it? Know what your idea of controlling the border was, Mr. President? It was creating an app so people could apply in their country to be flown into our country so they don't even count going across the border. That's what I think. And I think that he is losing it, too. And what happens is when older people, I think, I know it's a general, it's a stereotype, it's a generalization, not a stereotype, but when people get older, they have a lot less patience. And this guy knows he's leaving a failure. He knows he did a terrible job picking a vice president. She was a terrible nominee. She got all the money in the world, literally, got every celebrity for her. She didn't have to go through the drudges of failing at primaries, winning a caucus, losing another primary, battling it out, working on issues, finding out how she really felt. You gave her a layup and she lost it. And now you're saying she never should have took it, you would have won it. And to go out, you're making sure everyone realizes they made the right choice when they didn't choose him, in my view. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. Don't move.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back. Don't ask me how I know. Kennedy, you are here.
I am?
Yes.
I'm all here, Brian.
Bottom of the hour, Lieutenant Colonel Keith Kellogg. One of you, I forgot which one, is in charge of bringing peace between Russia and Ukraine. Is it you? I'm sorry, I didn't check your bio.
I mean, the general wishes it was him.
It's you.
He's so jealous.
Because did Trump tap you or him? My bad.
He tried to tap me, and I was like, I'm kind of busy.
Right. What would you do for the Trump administration? What couldn't you do?
I'd probably get rad. Probably be in charge of vibe.
Just vibe. Just vibe.
I mean, he's got a good vibe going. I would try and keep that going. Like, consistent vibe, it's harder to achieve than you think.
Well, I saw David Axelrod had an interesting comment. He basically wondered if it's Trump, because he's noticing a little bit different of a vibe, to steal your word.
Mm-hmm.
He says, you know, I'm wondering if this is going to stick. If he's going to keep this going when he actually gets into office, do you think he's going to be able to keep it going?
I think what you see is what you get. And he probably doesn't have the energy to be as bombastic as he was in 2016. And now he's not worried about reelection. He's more concerned about his legacy. And I think legacy building requires a little bit more of a muted temperament.
Because are you doing the same thing?
Yes. 1,000% yes.
Well,
my legacy is not secure, Brian.
It's not.
Not.
Right. And you still have the energy.
I'm taking steps.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it's like I walked in here. I flipped some people off. I don't know who they are. They had Australian accents. And they were in suits.
Right.
And I was like, how do you like me now?
Is that your Australian accent?
I'm working on it, Brian. I told you these things are a work in progress.
All right, that's fine. Here is Ari Fleischer on what America expects. Cut 14.
It's a real test of Republicans. It's one thing to have disagreed when Joe Biden was president and the bills weren't going to get signed into law. So it really did become definitional. Who are you? What does it mean to be a Republican today? But now the American people expect results. And if the disunity, if the squabbles within the party stop us from getting things passed in the House that otherwise would get through the Senate and get signed by Donald Trump, what a disservice. Why are they there? So this test of unity is going to be huge. And Trump knows that. He's doing everything he can to lean in and create unity. But I don't think there's a reason not to be unified when you know at the end of the day it will be signed into law by Donald Trump.
Maybe. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, it's not going to be fruitless. But a lot of people, we saw already with Chip Roy, who I understand is a principal guy, and Thomas Massey, and to a degree, Ralph Norman. Mm-hmm. You already saw, like, you know, obviously the only person who could get the votes would be Speaker Johnson. You already saw them holding out, stamping their feet. Do you think that's a bad indication or a hiccup?
No, I think it's an indication that there are still some philosophical differences within the party, and I think that's okay. I don't think that's a fatal flaw. And, you know, part of Massey's appeal to his voters is his consistency. You know, he is essentially the Ron Paul now of the House, and it's a lonely job, but he doesn't care.
Right, but when you only have a 1 or 2 seat advantage, it just blows up the Republicans.
Well, tough. Then don't, you know, don't put things like a continuing resolution on the docket that will only make our debt crisis worse, because we're going to have to borrow money to service the deficits with spending like that.
Right. But
until we have meaningful spending, I understand the principle.
Well, but just then nothing gets done.
It's not that nothing gets done, but you can't do things that violate your axioms. And I think you have a few gatekeepers, and I don't see Thomas Massey the way I see Marjorie Taylor Greene and Matt Gaetz, RIP. He's far more principled and less attention seeking, and the Republican Party would be a better party if they would follow Massey's philosophy.
So why doesn't he get into leadership?
I think he's too smart.
No, but the thing is, if you're a
I'm being completely dead honest with you. He's really smart. He has a couple degrees from MIT.
No, I'm not saying that. So yeah. Why can't the smartest guy be a committee chair?
I don't know that he represents the country club part of the party, which, you know, still very much runs things.
Yeah, I just see it to me. If you're going to be principled, why not be a leader?
I think in order to have leadership, you have to have a lot of people behind you. And he's more interested in his principles than a popularity contest.
Mm. But have you ever been on a team sport?
Mm-hmm.
And you
but that's why I'm now in triathlon.
Right. But you're on your own. You've had it with other people.
Yeah, pretty much.
Right.
Yep. Still pursuing goals.
Right, but you still like to win.
Yeah.
Right. Because Thomas Massey can't win by himself.
He knows that.
But he can
He's
lose.
Still a Republican.
But he can lose for everybody.
Well, maybe the Republican Party needs to reassess what it is, and it's been going in a better direction.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to find out. Are you for one big bill, or are you for four individual bills when it comes to oil and gas? When it comes to the border,
I'm
when it
for
comes to
individual bills
spending.
Because these big bills are too big. 1,500 pages and not having the time for your staff to read all of it—that's too big. I mean, that's ridiculous. That's like Obamacare era nonsense. So, yes, if they are smaller digestible bills that can be taken apart and amended and made better, then I think that's a better way of doing things.
Right. The problem
is the comprehensive stuff really scares me in Washington because, you know, it's like the Inflation Reduction Act had nothing to do with inflation, yet somehow that passed.
It was like the Vikings when they used to discover a place that was nice. They'd call it Iceland. Because nobody would want to go.
No one wants to go to Iceland.
Right. And they go, no one
No, we
go.
Want to go to Greenland because it's green.
And then it's terrible.
Like, green is fun. Right. Ice is cold.
They went out of their way. They made terrible brochures.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Like, that's exactly what this is.
I picked up a shirt in Florida that says, Florida sucks. Mm-hmm. Because they don't want anyone coming.
That's true.
So they took a page from the Vikings. Right, not the Minnesota Vikings, but they did. Isn't it crazy? I was talking about this morning. The Vikings, all the pictures, it's freezing out.
Yeah.
One stripe, no shirt of fur coming across the shoulder.
I mean, it doesn't even cover your areolas. That's got to be very cold.
I know. Then they, I don't,
are they like Scots? Do they wear kilts with nothing else?
I don't know.
It's not a good vibe for winter.
I need somebody to look that stuff up. So we had.
You're that guy. You're the historian. You write books about history. Like, you're literally that guy.
I'm talking about in real time. Right. Like Joe Rogan just tells
somebody. We
can
stop down for a few minutes and edit this later.
Like, he'll just say that during a podcast. You do the podcast. You're in the podcast world.
I'm a podcaster, Brian.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you'll just say, we're going to stop down because one of us has to use the restroom. That's what Joe Rogan says. We got to go. And he'll actually leave that on. Couple of things. I don't know if you heard, but we had Joel Kaplan, one of the high-ranking officers just under Mark Zuckerberg, on the couch today.
Yes.
On Fox and Friends. At which time he says, we're changing policies entirely.
Great.
We're going to get rid of the third-party fact-checking. We're going to start with community notes. We're going to stop with these punitive the punishments for people that in the past have been told they're going over the line. They're going to loosen things up and come up free speech.
Yeah.
What do you think's behind it? Do you think it's a legitimate change? Because I do.
Yes.
I've seen the evolving. Other people say it's purely transactional. Trump's in. We're trying to win him over.
No, I don't think that. I think that, you know, once you get billions and billions of dollars, you just want to secure billions for your shareholders. And the big experiment of using tech and big government to squash and cancel one person failed. And now they realize that they've built a mechanism that can squash and cancel them. And that's what they're panicked about. Because there are people in this sphere, in Trump's sphere, who hate giant corporations, J.D. Vance being prime among them, and they would be very happy to dismantle a company like Meta.
Well, I think they're looking at Google right now. I mean, they're under the scrutiny. Do they have too much power?
Same thing.
So I would think that, they said flat out that one of the reasons they did it is because of what Musk did at X, came in and exposed. And my call was, why don't you just go in and do what they did? If you really want to show people you've changed, put Matt Taibbi, Barry Weiss, and Michael Schellenberger, let them
I don't think the company would survive that, because the people who are guilty of the sins that would be exposed are still leading that company.
Right. But the way I understand it, I think you're right, by the way, the way I understand it, they were forced to do these things. Because the government called up, or Adam Schiff called up in X and said, yeah, shadow ban this. That's my competition. Shadow ban that, or just get rid of that.
I mean, but they had FBI agents who were working directly with the White House. And were like, shut this account down. This is dangerous. We think it's Russian collusion.
So do you think this is the first time they have their freedom back? Almost like they got out. They realized the prison guards are friendly.
No, so I think they're panicked, and they're evolving in real time. And they want their company to be the biggest, most powerful one. And the only way you can do that, because AI is going to be entwined with the government, is to curry favor with the most powerful people in the world.
So do you believe that if AOs, I want you to let you hear it. Here is Joel Kaplan today. Cut 39.
So what we're going to do instead is adopt a system like X has of community notes. So we're just going to rely on our own community of users to provide people more information about what they're seeing. And we think that's going to work. So somebody can write a note. And then the way it works is different people on the platform can sort of vote on that note. And if you get people who usually disagree, who all say, yeah, that sounds right, then that note gets put on the post and people see it. X has been doing it for a while. We think it's working really well. And we're going to adopt that system.
So, I mean, he sounds like he wants to be more like Twitter.
Yes.
Right? So, and Instagram, obviously, with Facebook. A lot of people go, well, I don't use Facebook, but billions do. And a lot of people use Instagram. And if TikTok goes by the board, Instagram's going to move up even further. Mm-hmm. But a couple of things. Do you believe, like, let's say a squad member becomes president in 4 years. Mm-hmm. Do they come back and go, yeah, well, it's time to clamp down on those conservative thinkers? Like, I believe that there's a change, that they're going to say, no, we're staying out of it. We're going to let this be a mature Wild West. What do you think?
I think we've already had some pretty wild swings of the pendulum. And I think people settled back with the swing that they were most familiar with. I don't know that we go that far left that soon. I think we moderate a little bit because people in big cities have had the Bernie Sanders, AOC local governance, and their cities are destroyed. Like anyone who lives in a city they grew up in and now looks around, like the memories they have as a kid don't match the reality now because these places are in freefall. They're a disaster. So I really don't believe that the pendulum goes that far. And I think tech will do a lot of course correction between now and when,
right.
You know, the entire planet is going rightward because leftism proves over and over again how bad it is. Like, what other examples do you need? Do you really need the United States to become North Korea or Venezuela? Like, you don't want that. You don't want a mass exodus. You don't want the kind of inflation and the criminality that they've had in Venezuela. You want things to be stable. And I think that's what people were voting for. And, you know, libertarians look around there like, yeah, government is the problem. Like, too much government is the problem. That's what you're dealing with when you have more government, more programs, and higher taxes. This is what you get.
Do you regret working on the Justin Trudeau campaign, judging by how his regime turned out?
I regret our romantic entanglement. Right. It was just, you know, my heart got over my skis. Yeah.
2018.
He's such a story boy. He's the worst. I can't believe he lasted as long
as he
did.
What about what he did to the truckers? We can't forget that. He had a carbon tax program, a gender balanced cabinet. Trudeau tells women to say told a woman to say people kind instead of mankind. These images emerge of him wearing blackface or brown face at a student teacher
conference.
Like, repeatedly,
but it wasn't just one example.
He did over and over again.
I mean, you can't go like, oh my God, I was so stupid. I was trying to have the most consistent costume ever. Like, I was competing with the theater kids. I went too far. No. He had a fetish. Like, there were multiple examples. Like, that's weird.
And or the Indian headdress, American Indian headdress. So he's gone, but I just think it's emblematic of what's happening around the country. Justin Trudeau, gone.
Around the world. Yeah.
Right. And it all started here.
Yes.
We're going to be an outnumbered together, but you're not done yet.
I'm not done, Brian. You're going to have to kick me out. Like, Pete's going to have to shackle me and throw me in the hallway like they do every other time.
Back in a moment.
Expanding your knowledge base. It's the Brian Kilmeade Show. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Of course, the ultimate indignity of this January 6th is that Donald Trump's opponent, Kamala Harris, because she is the vice president, serves as the master of ceremonies. But it does suck.
The votes for president of the United States are as follows. Donald J. Trump of the state of Florida has received 312 votes. Kamala D. Harris...
That's got a sting. She's like, I can hear you. It's like attending your own funeral. And even the mourners are like, woohoo! I can't imagine anything that would be more uncomfortable than standing there while the crowd applauds your opponent.
Kamala D. Harris of the state of California has received 226 votes.
There's a lot of joy in that room. I think she can still win this thing. She just needs to find like 130,000 votes in Georgia. And then, you know, some in Michigan and Pennsylvania, maybe Wisconsin, maybe that's the flip North Carolina.
So that was Jon Stewart. You know, it was interesting. I was listening to the Babylon Bee with Barry Weiss on a Free Press.
Mm-hmm.
And they talked about, he's like, what are they going to do now? Because they made their money. And they had their biggest audience because they were kind of trolling the left in their ridiculous woke politics. Jon Stewart had the best time beating up conservatives who sound more logical than ever. And he's like, don't worry, I'm going to be at Babylon Bee. They say we'll hit both sides. They're incapable of hitting both sides. Like, do you think they see the humor in themselves and their cancel culture?
The Bee?
No.
Oh.
Jon Stewart.
No.
In The Daily Show.
No. And I think, you know, their ratings, they live and die by Trump. And, you know, they lose a lot of subscriptions when
Trump's normal.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I mean, it's just funny.
I mean, they're hoping and praying. Like David Axelrod, he's not saying that because he thinks that Trump is going to be normalized for a few years. He's terrified about that because they need to, like, they are now addicted to reacting to they're going into their ninth year of being addicted to reacting to Trump and his just wild statements. And, you know, it's like he's an older guy and he has a very big job. And this time he knows how to do the job. That's all he's been thinking about for 4 years. That's it. He's as obsessed with the presidency as Hillary Clinton. But he's got it back. And he knows what he's doing and he knows what to do.
Would you think he'll spread it out? Hey, you don't like what's going on with inflation? Treasury Secretary. Hey, you don't like foreign policy? Look at Rubio. You don't like defense? Is he? Do you think he'll fan it out to his cabinet more? Do you think he wants to be the focal point still, Trump?
He wants to be the focal point. He wants to know everything, but he will delegate when necessary.
Will I see
just
you?
Just like you do, Brian.
Yes. Right now I have to do everything. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Top of the hour, we're going to be together.
Outnumbered.
Three other people, right?
Woo!
I'm wearing the same thing as you.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Brian Kilmeade Show. Joining us right now is a man with a huge responsibility. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, nominated by President-elect Trump to serve an assistant to the president and special envoy for Ukraine and Russia. I don't really don't know many Americans who have been on the ground more since this conflict began and even prior, and he's the perfect person to do it and to bring us inside what the negotiations could look like as he is, as Donald Trump is set to take power in 14 days. General, welcome back.
Brian, thanks for having me. Always good to be with you, my friend.
General, is there any hesitation of taking this job?
No. I mean, when you look at it, it's to me, Brian, it's as internationally, it's the wolf closest to the sled. It's the biggest international challenge that the president will face in the near term. I mean, look, and we've got the border issue, which is massive. We've got to fix that. We've got to fix the economy. But when you go internationally, this is the big one. And here's the reason why I wanted to do it for the president is the world has changed dramatically in the last 4 years. You know, 4 years ago, President Trump, based on who he was and how he did things, he kept adversaries separate. He kept the North Koreans in this corner, he kept the Iranians in this corner. You know, he kept the Russians over here, down here in the left corner over here. And, you know, and he kept the Chinese down on the right. Well, what's happened is now you've got this alliance. They've all come together. And because of that, now you're facing a much greater challenge in the world. And they are adversaries. Now, adversaries doesn't mean necessarily by definition enemies, but they are challenging you at every step, economically, diplomatically, militarily. So when I looked at it, I said, you know, I think I can really help the president and help the nation to do this. Now saying this very candidly, it probably was going to be a lot easier to solve world hunger in the next 90 days than this one. But it's a good challenge. The only person I think that can do it, Brian, is President Trump, because he's got the vision to do it. But most importantly, and a lot of people don't really pick up on this with him, is his ability to reach out and talk to people. I mean, that's one of his great advantages. Biden couldn't do that. Biden, you know, called the Saudis a pariah state. He refused to talk to Putin. President Trump won't do that. President Trump will talk to anybody, and because of that, he'll establish a dialogue. So I think this is entirely achievable in the near term. And it's not going to be easy, but I think it's all doable.
Well, the Ukrainians will talk to you any second. I think Zelensky, much more than when the president first started running for office, is much more approachable when it comes to talking now. And then on the other side, Vladimir Putin hasn't spoken to many people, but there are mixed signals whether he's willing to talk to your side. What could you tell us about the Russian side on this?
Well, we don't know until we sit down and really talk with him. And I wouldn't foreclose anything because I don't speak for the president. He speaks for himself. But I think when you look at what the Russians are going through, and, you know, they can have a lot of bluster, but the fact is they probably lost in the range of 350,000 dead, and numerous wounded as well. Their economy, because of sanctions, is not in the best of shape. And I think that's one of the leverage points we have. They're not going to be able to take all of Ukraine. You know, Ukraine is a massive country size-wise, and they don't have the military strength to do it. And if they do it, they're going to bump into NATO. And I'm not sure NATO would want them to do it. I mean, when this thing first started almost 3 years ago, I said the furthest they would move west would probably be the Dnieper River. They can't even get to there. So I think Putin, you know, even though they're not talking about it, this is Keith Kellogg saying it, Brian. It reminds me a little bit of a cage fight when you've got both sides wanting to tap out to agree, and they're looking there for a referee to help them move off the position they're currently on. That's not, that does not mean that everybody's going to get what they want. Nobody's going to be happy with it at the end. But I think if you reset the fight in Europe, it allows us to address the Middle East much better, Far East much better, North Korea much better, and allows us to really focus on things which are really critical to the United States, from energy to in economics through our border. So I think the Russians are ready. They don't talk like that, but I just get that, you know, gut feel that this is a good time. I need to do it. I mean, nobody wants to fight a war longer than 3 years, and this would be 3 years of war. That's the longest war in Europe since World War II. I mean, just think about it. It's a massive war, massive undertaking by both sides.
So now you have North Koreans actually fighting head-to-head with Ukrainians. Mm-hmm. I mean, these people haven't fought in a war in 60 years, since 1953, the armistice, and they're being grinded up reportedly, but still those are bodies. 10,000 went in. They say they could put up to 100,000 in. Can you put in perspective how bizarre that is? North Koreans with no stake in this fight, except for they want Russian technology and aid, they're just going in there. They have nothing against the Ukrainians, but they're fighting for the Russians. I mean, they're into a meat grinder, but still, when you have that type of manpower, that can make a difference.
Yeah, it does, Brian. And they signed when President Trump, and Trump won his first term, you know, the North Koreans didn't have a peace treaty with, a defense treaty with the Russians. They do now. So they supply this, and there's a quid pro quo because the Russians give them technology and they provide manpower. But when you look at the losses they are taking in an unclassified source, they're massive. They're losing like at a 5-to-1 ratio. But they can throw troops at it. That's the way the Russians fight. That's the way the North Koreans fight. If you historically look at it, they beat you by attrition. They just throw so many numbers at you that they basically overwhelm the battlefield. And that's what they're doing. And they're getting battlefield experience. They haven't fought since the Korean War. They're gaining experience in a different type of war now. And Kim doesn't care because Kim's getting something out of it. And the Russians basically are using the North Koreans as fodder, and especially in the Kursk region right now. So you see, that's the reason we've got to break apart that alliance. And President Trump can do that. And because what we want to do is break up that alliance between North Korea, between China, and with Iran and Russia as well, and segment the battlefield like we have done previously.
So General Kellogg, who would you talk to on the Russian side? Have they indicated who they might provide to you to deal with?
No, not at all. But we've picked up some, you know, and I want to get into it because we don't know, because, you know, if you said Peter Pan or Snow White, they may not be even around tomorrow. And I think that's going to be one of the keys to talk to them. We're pretty sure who we need to talk to on obviously the Ukrainian side. But Brian, don't forget, it's also critical for the Atlantic Alliance that we talk to all the senior leaders in NATO as well, because this is bottom line, this is a European problem. This is in Europe's backyard, and they've got to take the lead to do this. And there are certain nations out there that are willing to basically pony up troops once you get to a ceasefire or a peace deal. We're pretty sure the Brits will. We're pretty sure the French will. We're pretty sure the Poles will. We're pretty sure the Finns will as well. And that'll be a credible force to have in there to stabilize the situation. It won't be something like you see in Lebanon with UNIFIL when you had, you know, and I know it sounds critical, but it's true. When you look at Indians or Ghanaians, forces like that in there who just observed the fight, you're going to have troops that are well-trained, are willing to fight if necessary, and put them in a position that they'll actually have some battlefield stability. But when it comes, you just asked a great question, is who do we talk to with the Russians? That'll, I think, will be important for the president, President Trump, and when he talks to Putin, and he will, because that's the way President Trump is, and we'll get things moving after the inauguration on the 20th of January.
So Sergey Lavrov
does see that.
So Sergey Lavrov told an interview with TASS, their state-run agency. Mm-hmm. Lavrov claimed the U.S. plans to suspend hostilities along the line of contact and transfer responsibility for confrontation with Russia to the Europeans. He said, quote, we're not happy with these proposals made by members of the Trump team to postpone Ukraine's admission for 20 years and to station British and European peacekeeper forces in Ukraine. Was that a proposal that you guys offered, or is...
No, I don't know where Lavrov is coming with on saying that. Now, there's parts of that that have been talked about for a long time. The British peacekeepers is an example. The discussion about when or if Ukraine would come into NATO, you know, because all 32 countries have to approve their entrance into NATO if they want to have it. And some countries out there in Europe are a little bit hesitant right now. So that's kind of a hodgepodge of comments that have been made. But I think that's always the first step in negotiations. You know, there's a great story by on General Rowney when he was doing the first strategic arms limitation talks. He said, here's how you negotiate with the Russians. He said, imagine walking into a room. You walk in on one side, they walk in on the other. You know, traditionally what the Americans will do, they'll walk into a room, walk halfway across it. The Russians will come into a room, stand on the wall. So then you move to the rest, you know, another quarter way across the room. You've already given up three quarters of your position, and then the Russians come to you. He said, you got to understand how the Russians negotiate and how they talk. And I think what's happening, they're just throwing items out there. This is going to be open for discussions. You have a president who is very good at negotiations. I saw what he did with the North Koreans. You know, I'd remind everybody, you know, if I was to give one comment to Lavrov, I said, I'll tell you what, I'll send you a copy of Art of the Deal and read through it, right. You know, and remember in that, then, you know, businessman Donald J. Trump said, never be afraid to walk out of a bad deal. Gotcha. And he will. And so he did that with the North Koreans. And eventually, what did he do? He eventually crossed the DMZ and walked into North Korea. So I think this is something that it's kind of a negotiating ploy to throw it out there.
Gotcha.
And my attitude is like noted. Okay, we'll see where it goes.
Well, Lieutenant General, I think the president picked the right guy with you. There's no one more committed who understands it better on the American side. Lieutenant General Keith Kellogg, I'll talk to you again, General. Thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian. Thanks for having me.
Back in a moment.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
So right after this, I'll be able to take some calls. We'll squeeze them in right before the top of the hour. We're going over a few things, what's going on with Facebook and how they're changing their policies. It's going to look a lot like X now. Are you okay with that? But we're also talking about the terrible things Joe Biden's doing at the door, burning the house down, but I think hurting Democrats too. Now let's listen in.
They're going to Oman. Here's what incoming borders are. Tom Homan had to say about that. Roll it.
The death sentence that he commuted, the releasing terrorists back to Oman, like that's going to keep him out of the battlefield. And, you know, selling border wall pieces, signing policies that they're going to try to hamstring us. There's a lot of damage we got to undo, and they're just adding to that list that we have to undo. As far as releasing the terrorists, I don't know how we undo that, but I think it's a bad decision personally.
Brian, why release them now?
You know why? Because he feels as though the hell with it. I'm just going to do what Obama couldn't. He said he was going to close Gitmo and empty it out. So why don't I just put it out there? What do I care if I give up to get Americans back in Kabul? Really? You left Americans behind? That's interesting. We didn't know that. So three Americans held in Kabul. We'll give back an aid to Osama bin Laden, a part of his inner circle. What about the other guys? I mean, these guys, Katish and Halawasi, these guys are as bad as it gets. They're immovable because nobody wanted them back. What did we give Oman for them to take him? And as far as I can understand, it's a little bit dicey, Stuart, but they said they'll be monitored. Really? They'll be forced to stay in Oman like the Taliban Five? We're going to be forced to stay, I think, in Qatar or United Arab Emirates? Where'd they end up? They're now in the Taliban government. So this is totally irresponsible. President Biden is burning the house down on his way out.
Okay. Separately, by the way, the U.S. is in talks to swap detained Americans in Afghanistan for an alleged Osama bin Laden associate. That is separate from the 11 being released from Gitmo. But let me move on from there. New York City's Mayor Eric Adams, he's touting how crime has decreased in the city over the past year. Watch this, Brian.
When you looked at some of the horrific incidents that the commissioner talked about in these last few days, The average New Yorker would believe that they're living in a city that is out of control. That is not the reality. And we know that we are doing a good job in fighting crime, as the numbers would show. But we must deal with the perception that many New Yorkers feel. Quarter four, December, 15.5% decrease.
Okay, Brian, fair enough. But people in New York City just do not feel safe. And it's very hard to get around that.
And basically, the people of New York City are being mocked for saying they don't feel safe. One of the reasons why arrests are down, because they don't arrest anybody anymore. Because right. Cops aren't putting themselves on the line. Because they don't want to have qualified immunity, and they don't want to be sued for $32,000 a year. The other thing they have a huge problem with is beyond perception. There was a guy over the weekend who's been arrested 82 times who had a knife in his sock, had already stabbed two other people, let alone the guy who's today in the courtroom, an illegal immigrant, who lit a woman on fire the other day. So you go tell people it's in their head. You have congestion pricing, telling people to get out of the car, go to public transportation. You put them under the ground where it basically looks like a Star Wars bar scene. And then you tell people, don't worry about it, as you go back to Albany or you sit in Gracie Mansion. The American people have already shown they don't listen to politicians that make no sense and that blatantly tell untruths. And when Mayor Adams comes out and says the numbers are down and the MTA boss says it, no one believes it because we're living it.
Not too long ago, New York City was the safest city in America, if not the world. It's not now. Brian Kilmeade, thanks for joining us. We got to go. We'll see you later.
Okay.
By the way, New York City is...
Maya, you're in Kansas City, Missouri.
Hi. I'm just calling because this whole thing is just... This is like some bad sci-fi picture for me. I mean, we've got a president who has never really been there. Since he actually walked into office, people were questioning his mental capabilities. We've got a presidential wife who was available for every debate and waving Biden's hand for him in the public eye. And now all of a sudden, this man who is cognitively impaired is being not only blamed for everything, but it just seems like it's time we start really looking at whose hands are in his back and working his mouth.
I mean, when he banned, which you're referring to, 620,000 miles of acreage off the coast of the East and West Coast is going to be banned from drilling and excavation and exploring. And what you're talking about is these Gitmo detainees, the worst of the worst. Think about this. Bush couldn't get rid of him. Obama couldn't get rid of him. Trump couldn't get rid of him. And Biden waits for the last week of his presidency to put these people in Oman and says we're going to monitor them closely. And now we see that they have four of them have direct links to Bin Laden's inner circle. And, you know, they're being swapped now for Americans in Kabul.
All I know is that there are a lot of Americans who have died. Okay, even before 9/11, and the fact that the Democratic Party, that these liberal progressive scholars have decided that they're so mad at America that they're willing to destroy us, that's insane. And then he turns around and he gives Soros and Hillary medals. And Obama, these medals no longer have value. You can go to the store now and buy those little chocolate coins and put a ribbon around it and just start distributing to anyone, okay?
I know. They're worthless. You know, like Hillary Clinton, you're giving her Lifetime Achievement Awards. Magic Johnson, I actually don't know what he's done of late. He's just had a great career and great business career. That's fine. But you are rewarding Soros with putting DAs in power that have allowed the rule of law to go by the boards and put the American people and our society in danger. And they're being very hard to unglue them from their positions in these blue cities. So Soros, the opposite of a ward.
High atop Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. We're looking at what's going on with Facebook. We just had one of the high-ranking executives on the Fox and Friends couch to say they're reapproaching everything they're doing right now and going to look more like X. And to me, I believe them. I don't forgive them, but I believe them. I don't forget about the Zuckerbucks that flooded into all these battleground districts and states. I don't forget about the shadow banning that took place, the FBI infiltration when it came to all the things on vaccines and any type of I guess anti-Fauci rhetoric that were forced to take down or ban people for bringing up that they may have questioned where this disease came from. We all know China, and it came from a lab. Even John Stewart knew that. So I'm going to tell you about what they're going to do. We'll go over that. And I also think, to a degree, they feel guilty. I think Mark Zuckerberg himself feels guilty. And you saw that last year when he hopped on with Joe Rogan and said, oh, by the way, we were told by the FBI in the summer of 2020 that expect Russian disinformation to drop sometime in the fall as an October surprise. So when the laptop dropped, we said, aha, there you go. Now we know the FBI knew all about it. They suppressed it. We knew that Rudy Giuliani had it and he was about to release it. So I think, to a degree, he felt bad. I think they overcompensated after 2017 when they got blamed because Donald Trump used Facebook so effectively. Now he's got Instagram too, obviously. He's got Threads, and he says we're going to stop with the moderation. We're going to stop with the outsider fact check. We're going to start with community notes like X. So if something goes out there, it's controversial, I'll let you put it out and give your point of view. So that's going to be interesting. We're also following the horrific things that Joe Biden's doing on the way out the door, whether it's releasing those Gitmo detainees or it's him, what he's doing now with banning offshore drilling, which makes it difficult for Trump to get his agenda going and totally irresponsible to make the world a more dangerous place, to let these Al-Qaeda affiliates, the former bodyguards of Osama bin Laden out and about or exchanging from Americans in Kabul. These are some of the things that are going out now. At the bottom of the hour, Larry Kudlow will be with us. With us right now is Dr. Gad Saad, former professor and global ambassador at Norwood University, author of the best-selling books Saad Truth About Happiness and Secrets for Leading the Good Life, The Parasitic Mind, How Infectious Ideas Are Killing Common Sense. Gad, welcome back.
Oh, great to be with you. It's not former professor. I'm a visiting professor now there, but thank you. I'm great to be back.
Okay. First off, your reaction to Justin Trudeau going?
Well, I did a X Spaces yesterday where I shared my rather colorful reaction to it. Look, I think he's the biggest degenerate, malignant narcissist that certainly Canada's ever had as a prime minister. And I would argue that he might have been the worst of all of the degenerate Western leaders over the past 20, 30 years. So good riddance, except that, frankly, I can't fully celebrate because no matter what happens moving forward, the fact that he was able to be in power for nine years is a stain that we will never erase.
Well, why were people in Canada so slow to realize this? I mean, when he said we're not mankind, we're people kind, when all these pictures, he's condemning everyone being politically correct, while all these pictures emerge of him in blackface and Indian dress. I mean, the hypocrisy is everywhere, along with the crackdown on those truckers where he froze their bank accounts, which is unheard of in Western society.
Right. So I don't think I've ever mentioned this Arabic saying on your show, so I'll mention it here. There's an expression in Arabic, which when translated into English, you say getting drunk by smelling the cork of the wine bottle, which basically means you are of weak constituency. You don't have to actually drink the wine bottle to get drunk. You just take a whiff and you're already drunk. I argue that that's what often happens to the electorate, right? It's too difficult for me to engage my cognitive thinking in deciding what are the policies that I like of a particular politician. I'll just whiff the cork of Justin Trudeau. He's tall. He's smiley. He's young. He's got good hair. That's good enough for me. I'll vote for him. So it takes a while before people realize that they are succumbing to this kind of affect-based thinking.
So what kind of damage did he did? I heard in damaging the currency is basically the currency is damaged 40%, even though inflation is relatively tame.
Every single metric that you can use to measure the health of a society, we've gone backwards. Housing prices are massive. Inflation is massive. Orgiastic and exponential Jew hatred has completely gone out of control in Canada. I mean, Canada in general and Montreal, my home city, is absolutely insane. So there is no metric that you could think of that has led to an improvement as a result of Trudeau coming in. It's grotesque.
Do you think it's representative of the sobering up of Western society in that we're tired of the political correctness? It's not that Republicans are winning, it's that common sense is winning?
I mean, yes, except that. So if you remember, Brian, in my earlier book, The Parasitic Mind, I talked how it took about 50 to 100 years for all of these parasitic ideas to originally be spawned on university campus. And then they came together over the past 10, 20 years to create the lunacy that we have. So yes, it's great that Donald Trump is now in power and we can celebrate that. But the battle is going to be much longer. It took 50 to 100 years for this nonsense to fully develop. Hopefully, it won't take 50 to 100 years to eradicate it, but it's not going to end just because Donald Trump ascended to the highest office.
So Barry Weiss of the Free Press says, what happened in Canadian politics is not happening in a vacuum. It is a symptom of a much broader phenomenon. Call it the great crack-up of the old consensus. The consensus is being rejected through the West. Trump won the presidency by building a multiracial working-class coalition that had little affection for that progressive activism who supposedly spoke for them. The leader they say now is Giorgia Meloni of Italy. Do you concur?
Yes. You mean concur with the fact that the West is rejecting all that stuff?
And she's an example of that.
She is an example of that. I mean, Donald Trump, of course, is an example of that. Malay in Argentina is an example of that. The El Salvador president who turned El Salvador from a gang-infested place to almost no crime is an example of that.
Great example.
So people are waking up. The problem is, why didn't you wake up 15 or 20 years earlier, right? Because now we are going to solve the problem, but it's going to be a lot bloodier to do so now than 15 years ago.
So how do you feel today? We had Mark Zuckerberg on, we have Mark Zuckerberg's chief of staff essentially on the couch. His name is Joel Kaplan, and he said there's going to be major changes. And he sounded like Elon Musk is basically had his hand on his back talking about how they're going to let the platform now be a little bit more free and open. First, here's what Zuckerberg put out last night, Cut 37.
We're going to get back to our roots and focus on reducing mistakes, simplifying our policies, and restoring free expression on our platforms. More specifically, we're going to get rid of fact checkers and replace them with community notes similar to X, starting in the U.S.
So he talked about X, and I'll go play some of that too. But your thoughts about Zuckerberg essentially trying to say, I had an awakening.
Look, I'm not very impressed. It's better. It's always better late than never. But for you to do something, quote, bold, once the ecosystem suggests that you should be moving in that direction is hardly the epitome of courage, right? The courageous and the bold are the ones who stand up on top of the mountain and do the right thing, even if they're going to get blowback. So yes, it's great that Zuckerberg is joining the common sense train, but it's a little bit too late. So for example, I've had many strikes against me on Facebook because I posted a screenshot of death threats that I had received as a Jewish person. That was a manifestation of me being anti-Semitic. So this is the kind of nonsense that he should have woken up to many years ago.
Right. And you think that, you know, maybe he did, maybe he understands it. The other thing, Gad, is I don't diminish the fact that Joe Biden had the screws on, or his people had the screws on him big time. FBI had the screws on him big time. And, you know, I guess Democrats, to a degree, never thought they were going to lose power. And I think in many ways, this is his first time to come up for air, along with guilt he might have felt for what he did in 2020.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. And also, I guess people are emboldened. Even the most meek and cowardly folks are emboldened when they see someone like Elon Musk in the way that he carries himself. Right? I mean, as you probably know, Elon Musk and I know each other well. And the more you get to know Elon Musk, even on a personal level, the more you love him. And so maybe Zuckerberg is looking at Elon saying, hey, I could learn to be courageous and to be a honey badger like Elon. So more power to him.
All right. Maybe we'll just stay out of politics altogether, but we'll see with the advent of AI. Gad, I don't know if you would be able to detect this, but I remember J.D. Vance coming out and saying the AI, the emergence of the AI executives and these new companies is not as liberal as the social media companies that rose up in Silicon Valley. They seem to have a more balanced view of things. And speaking to David Sachs, who's going to be AI and cryptocurrency czar, speaking to the Army-Navy game, I get the sense that he is no screaming liberal. I mean, I think that he wants to, it's so vital that we have good leadership during this time, but I don't sense that he's going to be, you know, trying to win over Hollywood.
Oh, I agree. Look, I think, I don't know who first coined the term tech bros. I think a lot of the tech bros today are all very anti-woke. They're not only not woke, they're anti-woke. Many of those folks follow me, some of whom I've interacted with. And so that gives me great hope because ultimately the people in power will only listen to money. So, for example, academic administrators were very, very keen on ignoring my message. But if someone like Bill Ackman comes along and says, hey, you know that $100 million donation that I was going to give you, it's going to go away. Well, they're going to listen a lot more to him than they are to me. So more power to the tech bros. March on.
Your thoughts on Trump about to take over in 14 days. And, you know, he's got such a slim margin in the House. He's got a few senators to his advantage in the Senate. Your thoughts about what he's up against, knowing that it seems like Joe Biden's intent on burning the House down on his way out.
I am optimistic in that there is this 18-month window where a lot can be done. So I hope that he fully grabs it and does as much as he can, because to your point, once the midterm elections come around, if he loses any of the majority, then it'll be much harder to push his agenda. So I'm very optimistic, but cautiously so.
Do you think the rest of the world is more open to him now? It seems like they're all coming to visit him before. Is that a preemptive move, or is that a salutation?
I mean, I think that they're a lot more welcoming to the idea of Trump than they were, you know, in 2016. So it's a bit of kiss the ring phenomenon, but it's also the fact that a lot of them truly believed that he was going to be Orange Himmler when he turned out to be the exact opposite. So let's keep our fingers crossed.
Before I go, I want to tap into your Middle East knowledge. The U.S. is pausing restrictions on Syria, you know, trying to liking the fact that they kicked out Iran. They're in the process, I think, of throwing the Russians out of their bases, but knowing that their roots are in extremism and Al-Qaeda, Al-Nusra. Your attitude on what our attitude should be with this new Syrian government?
Not a good one. I mean, you saw even in a small micro sense how the leader was unwilling to shake the hand of, I can't remember if it was a French dignitary, because, you know, you're not supposed to shake the hand of a woman. So I don't hold out much hope for those guys. I mean, I think he's trying to send the signal that he's a bit more modern, more tolerant, and I will allow the Christians in Syria to put up the Christmas trees. As someone who comes from the Middle East, I can tell you that they tolerate you until on one day they decide they won't tolerate you, in which case you better put on the running shoes and run real fast because your head is about to be detached from the rest of your body. So I would not hold out too much hope for the current Syrian administration.
What do your people say about the condition of Hezbollah and Hamas right now?
By my people, meaning Jewish people?
Well, I would say your contacts in the Middle East.
Oh, I see. I mean, look, I think that October 7th, as devastatingly tragic as it was, allowed Israel to come in and really clean house with Hamas and Hezbollah. The ideology is not going to die, but certainly their ability to cause mayhem has certainly been diminished. So I would say keep going forward until hopefully every single one of the hostages come home. So I'm optimistic about that because you've awakened the giant.
Evidently, 34 hostages, their names were submitted. It's not clear exactly if the number is accurate or not, but they're submitted of people they would release. And of course, they want thousands of prisoners in return. Dr. Gad Saad, thanks so much. Appreciate your time.
Thank you so much. Cheers.
All right, 1-866-408-7669. Be able to take some calls, and then we got some quality time with Fox Business' own Larry Kudlow. He's a former White House economic advisor and still helping Trump from outside, in my view, by some of his questions and some of his interviews, if people are paying attention. But next is you, Brian Kilmeade Show.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
If Elon Musk didn't buy X and expose what he exposed and put community notes like this, do you think we'd be in the... What did he, in buying this and doing what he did, do for the introspection that Facebook is showing right now?
I think Elon's played an incredibly important role in moving the debate and getting people refocused on free expression. And that's been really constructive and productive. And we're just glad that we've got the opportunity now to make these kind of changes and to get back to our roots in free expression.
And that's what they're doing. They say their roots started Facebook, Instagram, a place just to talk to each other. Remember, originally they did a movie on it. Facebook was a way for a guy in college, a nerdy guy in college, to meet girls and set up almost a dating site. Now we know he's got billions of users around the world. And one important thing that he brought up, too, is that when Americans crack down on free speech or on social media, that gives the ones without a First Amendment rights to crack down with impunity. And that's what they were seeing. And, you know, for example, in Brazil, they kicked out for a brief time X. They didn't like some of the things were on the platform and they weren't policing it the way he wanted. I guess they worked it out. I don't know the details of it. But Facebook coming up saying there's new moderation. That on top of Jeff Bezos coming in saying, I want Washington Post to be more balanced. The LA Times owner saying, hey, if you don't want to write editorials at all pro-Trump, then just don't write about Trump at all. And them saying that it's going to be a conservative columnist is going to be hired. And it's that guy from CNN that's done a good job, Scott Jennings. He's going to be a columnist in LA Times. And we saw what the Washington Post did. I don't expect the New York Times to follow suit. But I am noticing a real effort to be more balanced. And a little of it is about survival, but I don't think it's intimidation. I mean, they're not intimidated by Trump. They took him on for 8 straight years. I mean, literally 8 straight years. They're not intimidated. But they also know that people are just shutting them off because from Hollywood, and they've joked about it, from Hollywood shutting them down, saying, you know, I don't care who you want me to vote for. I'm not listening. To New York Times, Washington Post, traditional media outlets saying, you know, we're endorsing the other guy, the other woman, and them just ignoring it and Trump winning the popular vote as well as the Electoral College. More people are, since this is the first time since 1928, more people recognize themselves as Republicans and Democrats in America. And knowing that the mainstream media feels the opposite, I think they see their power diminished. And they worry about their relevance with this diverse media environment. I think it is survival. I also think to a degree with Zuckerberg, it's conscience. We'll see. President Trump's having a press conference. We'll bring you some of the highlights there. I'll be an outnumbered at the top of the hour. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Information you want. Truth you demand. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Well, I favor one bill. I also want to get everything passed. And, you know, there are some people that don't necessarily agree with it. So I'm open to that also. My preference is one big, beautiful bill. Now, to do that takes longer. You know, to submit it takes longer, actually. But so it's a longer process. I would say that I'd live with that.
And that is President Trump speaking yesterday to you, Hewitt, about how he wants one big bill, not necessarily the perfect ideal, but when you have a diverse coalition like and a small advantage in the House, Speaker Johnson believes that the way to get everybody on board is, okay, some want defense spending, some want the tax reform, some want immediate border security, but very few want it all. So the ones that don't, you could say, well, I don't like this, but I like that. So it's a way to get all 215 or 218, depending on what day it is, on the same page. Larry Kudlow joins us now. He's got a great show at 4 o'clock on FBN, former White House economic advisor. Larry, your thoughts about one big bill and breaking up the bills, because I watched you spar with your good friend, Senator Ted Cruz, yesterday. You guys are on different pages.
One big, beautiful bill.
Oh, that's right.
Beautiful bill. And you know, that's what Trump wants. And he told
Senator John Thune and Speaker Mike Johnson at the Army-Navy game, which was, I think, around December 5th or 6th, something like that, that that's what he wanted. And then I spoke to him that Monday advocating one big, beautiful bill, and he said that that's what he wanted. And so I myself have been, you might say, crusading for it on the TV show and on the radio for weeks now. And I think that's what they're going to go for. And by the way, your point is right. You know, you have a tiny majority in the House, and you're only going to get one bite out of the apple. That's all you're going to get. It's what we should have learned looking at the first CR, which went up in flames, and then the second CR, and then the speakership. The margins are too small to think about a couple of reconciliation bills. It's just too small. Furthermore, your other point I agree with, you put together a coalition. In effect, you get the folks who are behind border closing, and you get the folks who are behind the tax cuts. You put them together, and you work it out. And it can be done, by the way. You know, I've talked to so many people. We had Jason Smith, the head of the Ways and Means Committee, on the show last night also. And it won't take that long because, Brian, what you're doing is basically merely extending the 2017 tax cut. Now, there are a few add-ons, like the tax-free cash tips for service workers and the tax-free overtime and something on seniors not being double taxed. But that's, you know, just a couple things, for heaven's sakes. And the Ways and Means Committee, from which all money bills must emanate, they're prepared for this. I mean, they've been working on this for over a year. And Senator Mike Crapo over in the Finance Committee is a very smart guy, and he knows exactly what to do. And I think on timing, you know, I appreciate the president's thoughts on timing, but I think by Memorial Day you could get it done. And Mike Johnson put out a schedule in the House. First comes the budget resolution, and then comes the reconciliation instructions. And the House drives this process. So the House, in effect, will tell the Senate what to do. And I think it's going to work out fine. I'm very optimistic about it.
But, I mean, you got people. I mean, he could, by the time they lose their Elise Stefanik seat and their Michael Waltz seat and their Matt Gaetz seat, they lose three more seats until April or May. So you probably need them back. But do you think the American people and the president are going to be patient enough not to do something big for 4 months?
Oh, yes, I think they will be. By the way, the two bill people have yet to prove that you're going to waltz through a bill without tax cuts. I mean, believe me. Again, let's go to the House on immigration and energy and defense spending. Now, they have the NDAA, you know, the National Defense Authorization Act. But you have to have spending offsets, Brian. That's the key. There's no paygo anymore. And that's just wrong. And even though I'm a tax cutting supply sider, I'm also a limited government budget cutter. You for all these things, and they want to spend $100 billion more or less on the border. And I'm all for closing the border, Lord knows. But my point is, you got to find $100 billion in spending cuts. And if you don't, there's going to be all hell to break loose. And as you say, the open seats won't be settled until mid to late April. So the fact is, it's not going to be much different. The timing is not going to be much different. The one big, beautiful bill might take a few weeks longer, but that's all. I mean, that's the way I see it. So I think this is very doable. And, you know, Trump has a lot of political capital right now. He's had a very successful post-election honeymoon. And I think, you know, he'll be making – here's another point, Brian. He'll be making many, many executive orders right off the top, day one. I know this, you know, because I'm very close to the transition people. And
on the border, for example, most of the work on the border is done through executive orders. The money that is the added money will be to help Tom Homan with more ICE agents and various processing issues so they can start the deportation program and beef up the border. But the rest of it is executive orders. And the other angle there is going to be Mexico's got to help us. They got to come back with the 25,000 troops to guarantee remain in Mexico.
On their side of the border.
That hasn't been done yet. Yeah.
So
right.
Senator Ron Johnson is a man of your own heart. He did his own math. He's just trying to figure out the grandiose spending, where we got off track. Here's what he discovered. Cut 12.
So in 2019, we spent $4.4 trillion. The year of the pandemic, we spent $6.5, and we've never looked back. We've never spent under $6 trillion since the pandemic. This year, we'll spend over $7 trillion. So you know, the Unit Party has done a really good job of deviously transferring discretionary spending into mandatory. I've laid out a proposal to go back to pre-pandemic spending levels, inflate them by inflation and you know population growth, exempt Social Security, Medicare, and interest, and we would have somewhere between $5.5 to $6.5 trillion of spending, saving massive amount of money, more than enough to pay for border security. So again, you look at the numbers, you put yourself back on a reasonable baseline based on pre-pandemic spending.
So your thoughts about his math, do you think we could do that?
Well, I think he's on to it. I mean, I think he's right. A lot of this pandemic money has been built into the spending baseline, and it shouldn't be. It should never have been. This was part of the, you know, phony accounting and the policies of the Biden administration. I mean, you can't have $2 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see. This must stop. And it's going to have to be stopped by, first of all, tax cuts that will grow the economy faster and throw off revenues. And second, budget cuts. You know, and here's where the Doge brothers, as I call them, Elon Musk and Vivek Ramaswamy, here's where they come in. They're going to be an important, you know, spending cut influence. They're going after the regulatory state also, but they would probably, I don't know whether, you know, Ron may not get what he wants, but what he's saying is quite sensible. The principle of what he's saying is quite sensible. And that would go into a one big, beautiful bill. And also, Brian, tariffs are going to go into it. I mean, look, the president hasn't articulated yet what his tariff strategy is going to be. But let's argue just, you know, theoretically, if he wants a 10% tariff, ring around the collar tariff for the whole country, which is less than what Europe has, by the way. You know, Europe has like a 20% value-added tax. But anyway, we have about more or less $5 trillion of imports coming into the country on a year-to-year basis. So 10% of that's $500 billion. That will finance whatever you need on taxes and border money. I mean, that's really a big chunk, and I don't have any problem with that at all. And then Trump will be negotiating along the way. You know how he is. He says stuff, and then people come to their senses, and they come to the table. But I think that will be part of the mix here. Tariff revenues will help the big, beautiful bill.
So, Larry, tell me if this is substantial. If I have a master operator like Elon Musk, I'm not really sure about exactly Vivek Ramaswamy, how he set up his companies, but if you look at all his companies, the way he cuts, the way he expedites, the way he finds, gets things to be lighter and faster and quicker, do you think he could look at Social Security? Do you think he could look at Medicare? Do you think he could look at some of the entitlement programs and not worry so much about benefits, but worry about operations? And will that provide a substantial enough cut to make these programs leaner in the way they expedite these checks, the way they get and receive money, revenue, and distribute it? Would that be significant?
Well, I don't. It's a very interesting point you're making. And Vivek has the same view, you know, no excess baggage in these companies. And Elon, what did he do? Cut, he fired 80% of the...
of Twitter.
Of Twitter X. I mean, yeah. So that's an interesting point of view. They're formally going to report on everything they do I think it's July of 26. Was mm-hmm. that the right? Something like that. And, you know, President Trump has stayed away from Social Security and Medicare, but they may convince him to do just what you're describing. You're not taking benefits down. You're just going after the administration of it, which I'm sure is incredibly bloated. I'm sure of
yeah.
that. But so that remains to be seen. There's just a lot of, I mean, the federal budget is so crazy. I started my career in federal government anyway at OMB. So I know something about the budget stuff.
And so
these, these programs, so many of them, for example, have been appropriated but unspent. I mean, the Bidens are still pushing out the door COVID money, Brian. COVID money. That's how ridiculous this is.
So, Larry, I'm going to have to go. I'm up against a break now. You know what that's like. You have your show at 4 o'clock. You're going to expand it. But people should know, Larry Kudlow is not just an interesting show. He brings you inside the government. So to know what's next. That's why I find you especially fascinating now, Larry. I'm so glad you didn't go to the White House. From my perspective, it's being a little selfish. Larry, thanks so much. We'll see you at 4 today on FBN.
Love you, Brian. Love you.
Back at you. Back in a moment.
Learning something new every day on The Brian Kilmeade Show. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on The Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Just a quick reminder, I'll be on Outnumbered at the top of the hour. Don't forget One Nation Saturdays at 9 o'clock Eastern time. But I do want to let you know that there's other things going on besides what's going on with the Trump team as they try to take office. So let's see if there's more to know.
More to know.
Here we go. Kim Jong-un is cracking down on the sale of hot dogs in North Korea with a penalty of time in labor camp. The spicy Korean-American hotspot, which, by the way, is I did not know they had a hotspot. It was North Korea reportedly banned these eating hot dogs from everywhere. The spicy Korean hotspot army-based stew includes hot dogs or spam among its ingredients. It was born from meat discarded by U.S. soldiers based in the region during the Korean War in the 1950s. The fusion fare is believed to be across the border in North Korea sometime in 2017, decades after it was invented. So I wouldn't want to eat that the way they describe it anyway. Steamed rice cakes are called something else unpronounceable. Also banned. They also banned an army stew that is also unpronounceable. So I'm getting the sense it's not great to live in North Korea. Maybe the best news is you can go get killed in Ukraine. Next, McDonald's says it's rolling back some of its diversity practices. The fast food giant says it's changing its approach to inclusion at the company. Guess what? Way overdue. Among the changes they can make, retiring representation goals, pausing external surveys, getting rid of DEI pledge for suppliers. Another change the McDonald's teams will defer to its diversity team as the Global Inclusion Team. No longer. The name change is more fitting for McDonald's in light of our inclusive value and better aligns with this team's work. In 2024, more than 30% of the company leaders were from underrepresented groups, McDonald's said in a memo. The company also achieved gender pay equity. So they feel as though they did it all. On the supplier front, the company last year met its goal of spending 25% on diverse-owned suppliers by 2025. Good. Don't go for the best. Just go for the one with the most interesting gender or sexual preference. Next, pro Luigi Mangione content is filling up the social media platforms, and it's a challenge to moderate it. Remember, this guy's an accused killer. Let's be honest. He's a killer. We watched him on tape. YouTube and Threads have taken down pro Luigi Mangione posts. They said violate their practices. The spokesperson for Business Insider says this means we're removing content that glorifies or promotes the suspect in the murder of the CEO, Brian Thompson. About time. Next, why do some drinkers become so violent and some don't? So they did a study at the Ohio State University, the University of Kentucky, and First Choice Psychology Clinic. They've uncovered a fascinating link between alcohol consumption, pain threshold, and aggressive behavior. Their study, published in the Journal of Studies of Alcohol and Drugs, suggests that when people drink, they become less sensitive to physical pain. You think? And this numbness could be the key reason why alcohol often leads to increased aggression. So far, this is the most ridiculous study ever. They looked at 875 people between 21 and 35. In each experiment, participants were randomly divided into two groups. One that drank, another received a placebo that drank and tastes like alcohol. Here's what gets interesting. After drinking, participants underwent a series of electrical shock tests to determine their pain threshold, the point at which mild sensations became painful. Then they participated in a competitive reaction. Participants who consumed alcohol had a significant higher pain threshold, meaning they could tolerate more intense electric shocks before experiencing as painful. I can't imagine a study that didn't need to be done more than that one. The secret to beating cancer may be sitting in beer yeast. Scientists at the University of Virginia Medicine, collaborating with researchers in Germany, have uncovered a surprising survival strategy in yeast cells that could unlock new ways to combat cancer. The cells can make a break when things get tough by going into deep sleep in order to stay alive. Then at a later point, they seemingly just wake back up. That's why we need to understand the basics of adaptation to starvation and how these cells become dormant to stay alive and avoid death. Using cutting-edge imaging techniques called cryo-electron microscope and tomography, think of it as a super powerful 3D microscope, the research team made a startling discovery. When yeast cells face starvation, they wrap their cellular batteries, known as mitochondria, in an unexpected blanket. The blanket is made up of deactivated ribosomes, which are usually responsible for producing proteins in the cell. The upside-down attachment has never been observed before. It could be the key to understanding how cells enter and exit the body. And that's a look at what's more to know. Keep in mind, if you have any suggestions for more to know, write me at briankilmeade.com. I'll take that into account. You're listening to The Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here. I'm going to be going out and outnumbered. Don't ask me how I know.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, The Menendez Brothers, Monsters or Misunderstood.
We have evolved to understanding that this kind of stuff can happen.
Judge Jeanine Pirro and a panel of experts break down the Menendez Brothers' new fight for freedom, and their defense attorney explains why he's optimistic he can clear their names.
Are these convicted killers monsters or just misunderstood?
Listen and follow at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.